Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here we go from the Twin Peaks studios, y'all, on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. And shout out to Jonathan Fagan, who I've known for a long time. Great writer for the Houston Chronicle. And he had an amazing piece about how our Rockets landed Russell Westbrook. I enjoyed it. I know you enjoyed it as well.
Absolutely. I've said it a million times, Rick. For me, man, it's one of those deals when you get a guy that it's very, very easy to hate when he's elsewhere. And then all of a sudden, the minute he dons the Rocket red, you're in love with him. That any athlete that can make my emotions swing like that has got my attention, brother. So I'm stoked about him being here, man. And the fact that these guys were able to pull it off was really, really cool. And you know where I was at. I was of the group, Rick, that the run it back ain't it. Now there's got to be some changes. I don't care how big or how small, but there had to be some changes. And Daryl Morey went out there and knocked it out of the park, my man.
He got it done. So, look, I think that Daryl Morey is, and I know and believe, and it's fact, he's a gangster GM. And, again, I mean that in the most affectionate way possible. He just gets stuff done, man. Now, he is not at the top, in my opinion, among NBA executives. I'll get to that in a second and tell you where I've got him ranked. But let's give you some of the details of this piece. The Westbrook deal was completed during a 20-minute Uber ride in Las Vegas. How about that? It's gangster. It took 6 days. Fagan does a great job of explaining that James Harden at one point reached out to Daryl Morey, like, what's taking so long? And Daryl Morey said to Harden, it took me 5 months to get you. Okay? Yeah. It took him 6 days to get Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, hey, look, when it popped and they realized that there was a fire sale going on in Oklahoma, it happened quick. And hey, look, hats off to Morey for being in an Uber ride when it all went down and just absolutely making it happen as quick as anything like that's ever happened. I know here in Houston anyway.
So, Clint, if you're in a competitive situation, and this is a very high-stakes poker game right here, are you not preying on the weak?
Sure.
Are you preying on the weak and preying on the vulnerable?
I think you prey on the weak and prey on the – in sports, especially if you're a GM, you absolutely – prey on the weak and prey on the vulnerable. Absolutely. And if it includes you getting a top 10 player that's in the league right now, hell yes you do, Rick.
So according to the article, and this isn't really hard to just wrap your brain around common sense wise, but the Paul George deal goes down where he's going to the Clippers and Daryl Morey's like, bing, light bulb goes on. We have an opening here. We have vulnerability here to prey on. And he did. And he immediately started working on, with Sam Presti, the GM of the Thunder, how can we get Russell Westbrook here? So that is another indication of just a shrewd, awesome general manager. He said, it was said in the article by Jonathan Fagan, that Morey talked to Harden a lot. But I found this interesting, Clint. He said that Harden talked to, reported, I should say, Harden talked to Russ before Harden talked to Morey about the move. And so there's all this talk with the NBA about players are getting together too much, and if they fine GMs and owners and all these guys for tampering, why are they letting the players essentially get away with tampering? But isn't that interesting that Harden had already talked to Russ before Morey talked to Harden about the possibility of the trade?
Yeah, I mean, and it just goes to show you that there's, I mean, what I love about that particular part of this story is the fact that Harden is going, hey, what we've done is not enough. Like, I don't care if we've been close. I don't care what the run it back crew has done. What are we going to do moving forward? We got to get better. And my boy Russ appears to be available. Let me check in with him and see if he is even remotely interested in coming down to Houston and putting a couple of seasons in next to me on the hardwood. And so I love that, man. I like that a lot more. This scenario in Houston, the fact that it was two childhood friends, I love that so much more than just two superstars that want to play together and essentially gang up on the rest of the league and go win a championship. Either way, look, I'm a win-at-all-cost guy, but the backstory of this thing from when Russ was 10 years old is absolutely beautiful. So hell yeah, Harden should have reached out. I'm glad he did reach out.
And they had to. I mean, you've got to find out, yo, man, like, you want to come here? You want to play? I mean, the players have to talk about this. They have to be comfortable with it. Maury also said, go ahead.
You made a great point, and I don't know if you've already hit it or not, but the fact that Maury owns Presti, the fact that he got Harden and West. I'm sitting there thinking about that. If you're Presti and you look up and Houston just goes on a roll next year, they don't even have to win it all. I hope they do. But if they go on a roll and make a deep playoff run and you're Presti sitting at home, you're going, I gave this dude two. I had three of the top 10 players under my control. One of them is now in Brooklyn after winning championships elsewhere, and two of them are sitting down in Houston trying to get him a gold ball, and I'm sitting here twiddling my thumbs with a $40 million Hall of Fame point guard.
You know who he should be mad at?
Who's that?
Kawhi Leonard. If Kawhi Leonard doesn't go to Paul George and say, yo, make it happen, or I might go to the Lakers, right? That's who you should be mad at if you're Sam Presti and OKC. And you're right. There is ownership. Daryl Morey and Sam Presti. There was a part of this article, Houston Chronicle, Jonathan Fagan. Morey said the negotiations drove him to wanting a shot of beer or a shot from the bar that they were at. And it said in the article that they were at the Golden Nugget. I've been going to Vegas since the mid-1990s, and the Golden Nugget is not on the Strip. It's old. They call it, I think, old school Las Vegas. And it's just not as pristine and fancy and nice as the Wynn or MGM or Cosmo or Aria. I was like, Golden Nugget?
Well, that's got to be one that Fertitta owns, right?
I'm not sure. Does he own casinos out there?
Yeah, he definitely owns casinos.
I did not know that.
And so, yeah, I would imagine the owner would be a little bit disappointed if they...
So that's why they were there.
If they were renting rooms somewhere else. But look, you said Daryl Morey, would you refer to him as a gangster GM?
He's a gangster GM.
Hey, look, gangsters don't stay on the Strip in the nicest spots. They got good something point. In the back alley. They're tucked away. They don't want everybody knowing what they're up to.
Very good point. I also like, Clint, how he handled Chris Paul with serious class, right?
Absolutely.
He called him with a heads up before the deal went down. Yo, we're, kind of working on this. Love you, but blah, blah, blah. Whatever he said. I really like this as well because it's true. But it's also just a nice way to sort of color Chris Paul's stay here in Houston. Daryl Morey said to the Houston Chronicle, quote, we were moments away from winning a title with him. And it definitely is a glass half full way of looking at Chris Paul's tenure here. But it's true.
Yeah, there's no doubt it's true, man. And I mean, it's one of those deals where, I was in the Chris Paul corner through this whole ordeal before the trade came around. I just felt like from a scheme standpoint, like they weren't getting the most out. Everybody gets hung up on the fact that Chris Paul's making X amount of dollars and it's handcuffing the Rockets. I don't get hung up on it because it's, what are we going to do about it? It is what it is. Now you've got to get the most you can out of Chris Paul while he's here. And I felt like that the scheme didn't necessarily capitalize on Chris Paul's talents, on the Hall of Fame point guard's talent. So when it's all said and done, Chris Paul had a huge hand in the success that the Rockets were able to have over the last couple of years. And I thought Daryl Morey handled it with first class, high class, as good as an owner or a GM could handle it with a star player. I thought it speaks volumes for what the kind of guy that Morey is.
Daryl Morey was already in my top 10 for NBA shot callers before getting Russell Westbrook. Just wanted to give you some examples from that Houston Chronicle article that sort of amplify that. Okay, it's one thing to say he's a top 10 GM. These are actual reasons why he is a top 10 GM. He dots every I, he crosses every T. Now, let's get to the list here. I've got Daryl Morey ninth among general managers or presidents, shot callers in the NBA. Number one is Jerry West.
Fair enough.
The logo. The best general manager in the history of the sport. The only guy I would put in the running with him is Red Auerbach. May God rest his soul. But Jerry West, any arguments there?
None at all. You mentioned it earlier. You can't argue. I mean, how many of these guys have a championship?
Well, every single guy that I'm about to mention that is above Daryl Morey, who I have a ton of respect for. Daryl, if you're listening, he knows what a fan I am. I've been friendly with him for years. So this is nothing but respect coming from me, Rick Kamla. But I can't put Daryl Morey above general managers who have had their hand on the steering wheel of a championship or championships. I just can't
and
do it.
And that's fair enough.
I just can't do it. So I've got him at the top of the list among, you know, the rest of the general managers. So it's Jerry West, one. Pat Riley, president of the Heat, number two. Danny Ainge, president of the Celtics, number three. R.C. Buford down in San Antonio. How many times has he won exec of the year? Three or four, something like that. Five championships. Masai Ujiri. Yeah. Literally, you want to talk about a gangster move? How about trading the beloved DeMar DeRozan? They love him in Toronto.
Right.
You
right.
trade him out, you get Kawhi. You don't know if it's a one and done or not. And you whack the coach of the year, Dwayne Casey, and bring in Nick Nurse, whose best work was in the G League, and he leads the team to a championship? Are you freaking kidding me?
What's the story behind that? That whole coach dynamic is interesting to me. Like you said, you whack one that clearly is top tier in the NBA coaching world, and you bring in a guy out of the G League. What's the story behind that?
So Nick Nurse, the head coach of Toronto, started in the G League, was an assistant coach under Dwayne Casey for a long time in Toronto, and so they just moved him over. It's exactly what you've been saying about the Rockets. Masai Ujiri and the Raptors didn't want to run it back because running it back wasn't good enough, right? Lowry and DeRozan and that
whole
crew.
Right, right.
So it's exactly what you've been telling me about what you wanted with Houston. I don't want to run it back. I've already seen this. I know this ain't going to work to get to the top of the mountain. And so Masai Ujiri played the exact same card. Again, trading a fan for a favorite in DeRozan. And then Dwayne Casey won the Coach of the Year award and got fired. Right? Are you kidding me? So Masai Ujiri's five. Breaking down my list of top 10 GMs, and I'm telling you where Daryl Morey fits in. Bob Myers is number six, GM of the Warriors. Oh, by the way, they just got done wrapping up a dynasty, right? Number seven is Donnie Nelson up the road in Dallas. And Houstonians, I don't mean to rankle you right now with that. Got a championship in 2011. Dirk, Jason Terry, the whole crew. David Griffin, now the Pelicans president, I believe. He had his hand on the steering wheel in 2016 when LeBron and Kyrie and Love won that championship. I got to give him that credit. And then I have Daryl Morey at nine, and I've got Tim Connelly at 10. And Clint, if Daryl Morey gets a title with this team, he will vault to number five. Because I believe that Daryl Morey overall as a general manager is better than Masai Ujiri. But he hasn't pulled off the amazing, the impossible, like Masai Ujiri has, but that's why Russell Westbrook is in town.
Yeah, look, I'm a believer in, and I got to see it. I got to see it to believe it. And so we can sit around and talk about it. And there's no doubt about it. There's a ton of respect needs to be given to the Rockets organization for what they've been able to pull off. And not just the Westbrook deal, with what they were able to put together with Chris Paul and James Harden was awfully impressive. So there's no doubt about it that the resume is impressive. But like you said, it just – to me, winning in championships, that takes the cake. That steals the show. So until that happens, I would have a hard time putting him above guys that have a championship. And some of them got multiple championships, right? So yeah, it's fair at nine. You don't have to soft shoe that one, baby. It's fair at nine. I take your opinion over anybody's on that deal.
My guy, that's Clint Sterner. I'm Rick Camley. We are Clint and Camley here on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. All right, let's talk Astros and Jose Altuve, because Clint, my favorite player growing up, I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. My favorite baseball player growing up was Pete Rose. I still love Pete Rose. I wish he was still on the Fox broadcast because I like his energy. I like his honesty. Jose Altuve yesterday got his 1,500th hit. Oh, by the way, on a three-run home run that took a 2-0 lead to make it a 5-0 lead and basically was game over. First of all, 1,500 hits is the franchise record for fastest, beating the great Jeff Bagwell by more than a full season. But this is where the stat gets really cool. He is ahead of Pete Rose's pace for hitting. Let me say that again. Jose Altuve is ahead of Pete Rose's pace for hitting through 1,190 games. And Spectrum Sportsnet did a great job of running the stat yesterday. Jose Altuve is ahead of Pete Rose by nine hits at the same point in their career. Pete Rose is the all-time hit leader, my friend. How cool is that stat?
It's unbelievable. It's just one more thing that we take for granted, right? I don't want to say I'm a spoiled fan, but it's just one more thing that you just sit there and watch these guys rake on a nightly basis, and you really just take for granted that you got a modern-day Pete Rose in the making right here in front of you.
And in terms of some of these other stats, now I'm thinking, Clint, you know how my, like, history brain is wired? I'm thinking 3,000 hits.
Right.
Okay, like, he's at 1,500, faster than Pete freaking Rose. And I'm a baseball historian, and I was a history major in school, so this stuff just gets me going. If he maintains the pace that he's on right now, he will reach 3,000 hits at 38 at the latest, okay? Because I'm including partial seasons, his rookie year when he played, I don't know, half of the year. So it could be 36 or 37 when he hits 3,000 hits. Clint, he's got five more seasons under contract with the Astros. Actually, that big extension that he signed kicks in next year. It'll be 5 years at exactly $26 million per. I don't believe he will get to 3,000 hits on that contract, but he will on his next contract, and hopefully that's here in Houston.
Yeah, I would think that relative to the position players, I mean, and this is a good conversation to have down the road, maybe Bregman, but relative to the position players, I don't know that he's not the priority one. Priority number one is Altuve. Now, I know he's under contract, and so there's no need to be concerned about it, but relative to keeping a guy here for his entire career, Altuve, other than the pitchers. Now, obviously, you'd love to be able to – we're going to sit here and have a conversation about we'd love to be able to keep Cole here for his entire career. I don't know if that's going to be able to happen or not, but take the pitchers out of the mix. I mean, that's a different – those are different animals. But when you're talking about position players and hitters, I got to believe that if Altuve being here his entire career is not priority number one, right? If it's not 1A, it's 1B. Maybe Bregman in the as far as the position players. Maybe Springer's in that conversation, right? But yeah, the point is that it would be awesome to be able to buy a ticket and go down the street and watch the Astros and watch Altuve become the all-time hits leader.
Unbelievable, man. So he's 29 years old right now, not 31 or 32 when the clock starts to tick loudly, right? The clock isn't even really ticking right now. I mean, it's just an odometer running as you go down the road. 29 years old, halfway to 3,000 hits. And I was looking at the back of his his stats on baseballreference.com. I think it was four consecutive years of way more than 200 hits. Injuries have hit him a little bit lately. But Altuve is looking great right now. Like the body, right? In terms of the knee surgery and he's really playing his best ball of the year. And that batting average is creeping closer to 300, my friend.
Yeah, and when you watch these guys, when you watch him play, I mean, it's unfair. I mean, he swings out of his shoes damn near every time he swings the bat. I mean, how this guy makes contact at a clip of which you just mentioned, the 1,500 hits, the pace to knock 3,000 down. I mean, the fact that that guy is that good of a contact hitter, that good of a hitter with two strikes, that he has that generates that much power, all of that. The fact that that guy does it coming out of his cleats when he swings. Every at-bat is impressive.
And he's entertaining to watch, man. And I can't believe this is all coming from the pint-sized, like, 5'6" frame of his, right? He really is a marvel. Wade Miley did it again yesterday, got his ninth win, dropped the ERA to 3.06, no runs allowed in five innings.
Speaking of, yesterday was a tough day for me, man. I saw this weekend was a tough weekend for me. Saturday, I watched Deshaun Watson, in a joking manner, try to chase down a guy that had picked up a fumble, and I'm thinking, no, we don't need no hamstrings, we don't need any ankles, pump your brakes for. And then I watch, I flip the TV on, I'm watching the Astros yesterday, and I see Miley rounding second base,
right.
And hoofing it to third, and I'm thinking, no, man, we don't need that, just pull the reins back a little bit, young fella, and if you get thrown out at third, so be it. Those two times this weekend, on Saturday, once on Saturday and once on Sunday, my heart skipped a beat because I was worried about one of or two of the top athletes in the Houston sports world. They were pushing it a little bit too much for my liking.
And in terms of you mentioned Wade Miley, he got a walk, and Springer hit one. I forget where. Maybe it was into the corner, but the announcers were talking about that, like, any position player would have scored from first base on that. He's Wade Miley. He's a pitcher. To Clint's point, we don't need him out there you know, spraining an ankle, pulling a hamstring, anything like that, it didn't matter because a couple batters later, Jose Altuve came up, three-run dunk, the hit that we're talking about to get 1,500.
Yeah, he had to hoof it to third, but he just coasted in home after Altuve.
Did you see him thanking Gary Pettis, no, the third base coach? He was like, thanks, coach.
Thanks for holding me back.
Yeah, instead of doing the wheel, sending him home.
One thing before we leave the Astros, one thing that I saw yesterday during the broadcast is they highlighted how Miley is changing up how many times he's using certain pitches. Like in his the last 20 starts, he had thrown a changeup 17% of the time, and the last start before last night he had thrown the changeup 31% of the time. Hmm. So think about it. My point is this: the dude's out there just having a hell of a season, having an absolute beast of a season, and he's still tinkering with, you know, what pitches he's going to throw and how often he's going to throw them to the accord of 17% over 20 games to 31% in one single game. I mean, that's pretty impressive. I asked myself, is that more about the lineup, or is that something he's trying to find his sweet spot and what he's really good at?
I think it's more the lineup, Clint, to answer your question. And what is Wade Miley good at? Keeping hitters off balance. And yep. If they know the percentage is 17 and he hits them with 31, all of a sudden now they're like, what the hell? Why is he throwing all these changeup? This isn't who he is. So loving some Wade Miley.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.